Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our Q4 and annual results meeting. This is a combined press and analyst meeting. I would like to welcome the representatives from the Dutch press here in the room and our Dutch and Belgium analysts. Here in the room is also present our full executive board. Of course, we have Ben and Robert-Jan, our CEO and CFO, on stage. In the room are François Béharel, Linda Galipeau, Sjaak van den Broek, and Leo Lindelof. On the line, we have our U.K. and French analysts. Welcome. I would also like to welcome the investors who are listening to this call, and of course, many of our colleagues who are also listening to this call. The agenda for today is the regular setup. We'll start with the operational updates from Ben Noteboom, followed by Robert-Jan van de Kraats with a financial update, and we'll end with the Q&A. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Q4 and annual results presentation. We gave the title Solid Final Quarter in a Challenging Year, which is the case, of course. We've seen quite a change from Q1 to Q4. As at the end of Q1, everybody was still optimistic. Stock exchange was up, and everybody thought, "Well, we've seen the worst of the crisis now." That's obviously changed in Q2, where we announced a 70 million-100 million cost savings program for the few quarters after that. As you will have seen, and we get into in details, we've more than achieved that already by now. That means there's going to be more ambition there, so I'll leave the question to you. We'll get back to that. Again, next to -5%, it's very loud. I don't know. Yeah. I hate my own voice anyhow. Can we turn the volume down a bit? There's lots of echo. Thank you. Down. Down means less. Yeah. Thank you. Let's get to the performance. If you look at Q4, we had, again, a stable, if you want, decline compared to Q3, also at a -5%. Although, of course, the numbers in some markets were influenced by, first of all, our strategic choice to go for profit and not for revenue. That, for example, you'll recognize in the numbers of the U.S., where we saw a zero change in revenue and a 4% increase in gross margins. That means, of course, we've shed some loss-making business, and this has happened in more markets. This had an effect. Next to that, in the U.S., we also had Sandy, and the fiscal cliff, funny enough, also had an effect on the behavior of the market. I think it's one of the few events where this really was recognized in the market and some decisions were held back. We see actually that the sort of relief has occurred in January, and that also had its effect. -5.3% growth trend, stable through the quarter. Continued growth in a few markets. Latin America, Switzerland, Japan did actually very well. Operating expenses down 22 million. Again, you should keep in mind that when we announced the 70 million-100 million, we were at 648 euros cost. We're now at 616. That for sure gives me the confidence that we are well on our way back to be master of excellent execution again. EBITDA, 3.7%, the same percentage EBITDA as last year, be it at a 7 million less because we lost 143 million of sales, obviously. That means the recovery ratio was more than satisfactory given our targets of at least 50% recovery. That means if we lose 1 euro gross margin, we ask our opcos to reduce that cost with 0.50. Well, we've more than achieved that in Q4. Key points, again, diverging growth trends across regions. Latin America, where Argentina to a certain extent, but for sure Brazil is booming. We are investing there way over our normal field steering, because it's actually its replacement of an acquisition because we're growing there autonomously. North America has done well. Japan has done excellent, and Europe still in a gradual decline. Key priorities are clear. Actually, it should have three bullets saying costs, 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 and then the other ones. Profitability over market share, obviously, is the next three bullet points. We also see quite some interesting developments in growth opportunities. If you look at other services we supply to the market than our, if you want, traditional and perm, then we see that the HRS activities, as we've bundled them, actually have a more than satisfactory and way above average return. If you would look at our HRS as a separate business, you would see an EBITDA margin of 7.2% on those activities, which is huge and also is a big growth area. So that for sure is the reason that why we keep on investing in that sort of activities next to our field steering. Quarterly cost level down 30 million in constant currency since Q2. Again, this is an excellent sign for what's to be achieved, especially in light of the extra provisions we took in Q4 of over 50 million. I'll get back to those two. How do we manage today, actually? In the past, we had these romantic times where we had one model, we had a unit, we had two consultants, and then the top of diversification was that we had different sources of units. Today, we have at least 9, and if it depends on your definition, or 10 delivery models. We just want to illustrate on how we actually manage the company today. So we make clear analysis of clients. We differentiate them, obviously, in size, complexity, margins we can achieve, and service that they want to pay for. And then we have to be nimble on our feet to direct revenue to the right delivery model. Right delivery model means we supply the kind of service the client is willing to pay for, and for us it has to be a profitable activity. That actually makes our business a lot more interesting. It increases barriers of entry, because it's way, way more difficult to suddenly have a hub where you have to supply large quantities of candidates across a big country, or where you have to combine different sort of services for one client. That actually is good development for companies like ours that we tend to think are more sophisticated in delivery models than many of the small competitors. So that gives us an edge in the future. That's again also why we are investing in that sort of activities, and that's why we are very pleased that the return on those activities are way above average. Trends, again, we just mentioned trends. Here we put it in a graph. The group, blue, Europe, sort of pink, North America, yellow or orange, and rest of world. But we also see that the trends are gradual. So it's more or less flat. Maybe it's too early to talk about bottoming out, but anyhow, we don't see anything falling off a cliff. We see the same trends continuing in January, again a -5. So that means the environment for our company, given our ability to actually adapt to changes in the market, be it growth or decline, on the lowest possible operational level, gives us ample time to adapt our costs and if necessary, also invest in areas where we should be investing. Focus on a few specific areas, obviously. North America, very important. We should actually... We talked a bit about the heading of this slide, because a 5.3% EBITDA is an all-time high, and we are convinced there's more to come. So I think we've had two operations. We had an excellent turnaround of our staffing business. We had an excellent integration of the video acquisition first, and second, of course, and last but not least, I would say also adding as eventware activities there, making North America our biggest region, and again also our most profitable region in that respect, especially if related to the size. Again, focus on client profitability. For sure, this has had a big effect on top line, next to Sandy and the fiscal cliff, by the way. Client profitability, by the way, is not only margin. We had a sort of confusing word in here originally. You said we also focus on safety. Why do we say safety? Because with safety we mean that if you look at a workers' comp, that means the charge you get if accidents happen or not happen to your employees can vary widely. That has big impact on your profitability. So more and more we've been able to actually adapt our client portfolio, that means the positions where our temps work, to safer environments, hence also more white collar, more specialized, etc., etc. That also has an effect on our profitability. So not only do we look at the actual gross margin, but also at the risks in those specific segments where the clients might be active. This again also contributes in staffing to profitability. Obviously, in professionals, It's less of an item. There are very few dangerous offices. Easing demand in banking and finance burned down 5%. Again, especially December was a weak month. So there was a specific environment there. It might turn out to be better in Q1, but let's wait and see. Staffing in an hour is down 1%. But again, also here we saw gross margins up 6%. So that's really quite a big gap between the two. It's a conscious strategy. There are quite a number of customers we are not interested in because we can't make a decent return, which means, by the way, that we cannot supply them through a model that generates profit. So we look at it twofold. We make a very precise analysis of profitability per client. Then we think about other alternatives, two ways, either to increase profitability, for example, by improving safety, or by using other delivery models. And obviously there's a floor, and below a certain percentage margin, there's no way we can make money. So those clients actually, we terminate the contracts with. Professionals up 2%. Again, there we saw really an influence of the fiscal cliff, to a certain extent, also Sandy, of course. Continued growth and solid profitability, MSP and RPO, I just mentioned. Would you take those activities separate as a business unit in Q4 would have been for all of the companies 7.2% EBITDA, and the size of that of the segment obviously is growing because it has way above average growth. Canada up 3%, and again the EBITDA margin I just already mentioned, 5.3%, an all-time high because of all the measures we took and the clear focus in management in these activities. On the integration, staffing is done. Professionals, actually, from an operational point, is also clear, is also done. The remaining part is IT. And actually, it's a fine line between is it integration or are we building new systems? It's a bit of both. We are combining systems, obviously. We're going to go to one back office, also location in the U.S. It'll be in Atlanta. It's a change from our initial plan, because it turned out that by the end, actually, we skipped one development step in between, if you want. It's going to give us more synergies. It's one of the reasons why our synergy targets have been going up, obviously. And the full amount, obviously not in the year 2013, but during a quarter, later quarters in this year, in 2013, we'll see the synergies kicking in. It doesn't mean that we make more than $50 million synergies this year. But the run rate will be at the $50 million later this year. France, not an easy market. Revenue down 14%. Here also we have been very strict, if you want, in negotiating with clients that had below acceptable margin levels. Trend was stable through the quarter. We saw, of course, in-house we have many of the clients that have lower margins and some actually so low that we don't see it happening. We also see, of course, a decline in the activities in, for example, automotive. In a later slide, we'll get back into the sectors a bit. You'll see a double minus there. That means it's more than 10% decline in that segment. Perm placement is flat year on year, which is actually not so bad given the big decline in the staffing market. Gross profit down 7%. As an amount, obviously, gross profit margin is up. But as we shared with you earlier, we actually have aligned our accounting of subsidies with the certainty we have about the exact amount. That means the first three quarters was a bit lower and the fourth quarter is a bit higher. But still, cost down 9 million. And of course, the news here is that we have made a provision of 28.2 million euros. We should keep into account that we will not be able to realize or actually implement the reorganization during, for sure, the first two quarters, because the process we have to go through in France, it's a very formal and precisely determined process. You have to take every step. The earliest possible and the most positive case we could start executing would be in June. The restructuring charge consists of two parts. People. But also the branches, because as we shared with you earlier, we're going to close down 250 smaller branches and combine them into 65 big branches. That means we will provide for the lease costs for those small branches, depending obviously on the length of the lease that we still have to take into account. And can we then have sublease earlier, then we'll have some savings there. But we're not scribbling in a large number there. We're not very optimistic. EBITDA margin 3.5%, which is actually a good return given the difficult situation of the market in France. There's a lot of talk about new legislation, wage subsidies. It is difficult to put a number against it because there's still a lot of talk about the exact details of how it's going, what it's going to look like. We anticipate it'll have a slightly positive effect on our gross margin, and that means also bottom line, obviously. The exact amount we're not sure of. The measure is intended to make labor a bit cheaper in France, which for sure is an excellent idea. It would be nice if actually there would be further steps taken in France. I think it would help everybody, every Frenchman, Frenchwoman, France and Europe. So we have to see how it works out. We anticipate so far, but it's very preliminary, a positive effect of about 0.5% on our gross margin. But again, we cannot guarantee this yet because the rules that are still being defined and refined, and that's always a risk. So let's wait and see. But that's how it looks like so far. The Netherlands, minus 3%. I actually just saw that the economy GDP went down 0.2% in Q4. According to the journalist, a close to a disaster. On the other hand, if you come from a minus 0.9 to a minus 0.2, I guess you could also see it as an improvement. Continued growth at in-house and payroll, mainly. Yacht at minus 13, but for sure in Yacht we'll see far better results in Q1, given the fact that we had a major reorganization. We cancelled a complete management layer, so it means we have relatively more people billing, less overhead. So we are pretty optimistic about the contribution of Yacht this year. There's some gross margin pressure, a little bit about through competition, a little bit because of change in mix, which not necessarily means less profit, because the payroll, for example, is a very profitable margin with considerably below average gross margin. We're going to have higher social security charges this year, and we are obviously already anticipated. That's why we did a few things. We had price increases in the market during Q4, which were reasonably successful, and negotiations are still in progress with a number of our clients. One of the reasons we had additional restructuring programs, because we knew we had to be leaner in order to compensate for some gross margin decline. And we have more initiatives in scope. For example, if you look at sick leave, that used to be an activity that was managed through government, UWV, a government body anyhow, a public body more or less. We are now, actually have within 3 months, which I think is an excellent performance, we have now an organization in place to do the administration and to run the risk ourselves. That'll create a contribution to our profit because we will be more efficient, we will have less transaction costs because we will not be paying the average, we'll be paying our own sick leave. And we already had in place an activity for many years on health and safety, by which we had a below average sick leave. So that's going to generate some relief to the potential gross margin pressure. Cost down 10 million year on year. Lower marketing cost, obviously. There was something called the Olympics in Q3, which obviously generated quite some marketing spend. And the restructuring programs in Tempo Team and Yacht. Charge of 18.6 million. EBITDA margin of 5.4% in Q4. Germany, a challenging environment. Also, the German economy is now in decline. And I'll show you later again the different sectors. You'll also see that the automotive industry in Germany is in decline. And of course, we always see a reflection of that in our numbers. Organic growth, so revenue down minus 9. Compared to minus 5 in Q3. We had the increase of the new CLA, and to be honest, to my surprise, we did not see a decline in employees working because of it. I had anticipated decline, we also have organized our outsourcing company as an alternative. Would clients be interested in that? But what we see today is number of employees working is not going down. The question is, by the way, growth in professionals. I'll get back to the equal pay in a minute. Plus three, it's actually not mainly due, it's only due to IT. Our company Gulp has really, has an excellent year with high growth, good contribution, excellent company. Gross margin pressure, the question is what the effect will be of equal pay and the rather complex legislation or CLAs we have in place now in Germany. I think we are proud because within 2 months our German organization had our IT systems adapted to the new reality, and the new reality is complex. Maybe as a reminder, that means we have a CLA per sector. The first one that was concluded was with the metal sector that also includes automotive. It means that we start with the pay levels of our own CLA, collective labor agreement, and then the longer an employee works in a specific position at a specific client, the closer he or she should get the salary to the salary levels in that specific industry. That means, for example, in the metal industry, after 6 weeks, the employee gets a 15% surcharge on our CLA's pay level. And then it continues until a maximum of 55%. By the way, at a 55%, we'll be at 90% of the CLA of the automotive industry, for example. But still, what we see happening, that's why we maybe have a potentially a confusing statement here. No impact on nominal gross profit. What we want to express here, that what we see happening is that clients obviously pay the gross margin they were paying before, but on the surcharges like the 15%, etc., they are not willing to pay the same percentage margin over that 15% or more. Again, this is going to affect a part of a population, by far not the whole population. This is, of course, only an issue at the lower part of the market, the blue-collar part, the professionals. It doesn't play any role. So that means that's why we try to express it by saying nominally the gross profit per placement will not change. However, if you look at the percentage and you would have a 15% extra charge and not have a margin over that, it might look as if margin goes down. That, of course, is the same thing, negotiations, cost control to compensate for the gross margin, and by the way also the revenue effect. EBITDA margin of 5.1%. compared to a really good Q4 last year. And as a forecast, obviously, since we have fixed contracts with our employees, the working days has a quite a huge impact on profitability in Germany. And Q1 really is, in that respect, a disastrous quarter, if you want, because it's 3 days less. So that does have an effect on profitability for Q1. Part of it will be compensated in Q2. And I think over the year we lose, is it 1 day? Something like that. So the effect is going to be small. But for Q1, it'll have an effect. Belgium, focus on cost. Revenue minus 8, stable rate of decline. Actually, there's very little specific stuff we need to mention here. We had two companies, because in the excellent execution culture we obviously have, we also created two companies in Luxembourg when we after the acquisition of Vedior. That doesn't make any sense in a small market, so we combined Randstad and Luxembourg Randstad and Tempo Team in Luxembourg, which we corrected the mistake we made during the implementation. This and a few other small restructurings actually required a charge of 5.5 million, EBITDA margin at 4.4%, OPEX down 4%. UK. Well, my preference for the heading would have been profit. I think we've come a long way. We've now had 4 consecutive months of profit. It's not a one-off. Operation is improving for sure. Education has always been a big contributor to profit. I think we have the operations targeted in the right direction again, doing well. Finance is doing well with nice growth in Q4. Staffing in house minus 26, this for sure is a conscious decision. We had big revenues there, lots of temps working, no profit. And hobbies are nice, but not at the expense of profit. Good growth in MSP and RPO, for sure. Perm fees minus 16, but still, again, I think overall focus on cost was high, back office centralization well on track, because we, again, as you might remember, we had many companies with many different back offices. A small restructuring charge of 1.6, mainly due to people again. An EBITDA margin of 1.5. 1.5% actually, top ever was 7%. Again, we're happy that U.K. turned the corner. That's good news for everybody. That actually in a difficult market still. Because the other profit maker we historically have is construction, CPE. Obviously, construction is not exactly booming. This is an understatement, but I'm talking about the U.K., so that is just a fight. Iberia. If you talk about operational excellence, for sure, Spain is top of the list in our company, with a few others, obviously. But if you look at what's happening there, revenue in Spain this year was 480 million. Maybe some historical perspective. The year we acquired Vedior, the aggregate of revenue was 920 million euros in Spain. Now we are at 480, which for sure is another illustration of the bad economic and employment market situation in Spain. In spite of that, we see a return, EBITDA of 3.2%. And obviously, if volume declines, there's margin pressure. You have to be extremely sufficient. For sure, our Spanish organization has done a more than fantastic job. We have a small professionals business there, organically created, 25% growth in Q4, doing very well. Portugal, again, a country that is also on, I think it's second on the list, if you put it upside down, Greece and then Portugal, I guess, in a very bad shape. Economy, revenues minus 14%. Very efficient organization also, and they've done well in adapting to the reality there. FTE is down 13% year-on-year. Rest of world. Japan, revenue grew by 6%, where we think that the market is in decline. It means more than 10% outperformance, according to us. But even if it's only 8, it's still an excellent performance. Strong growth in both blue collar and outplacement, and a good profitability improvement. We actually, in Q4, had an extra charge that actually was related to history, but we had to take it in Q4. If you would look at the run rate, profitability in Japan is north of 4.5%. EBITDA, doing very well. Australia, disappointing. Considerable loss again in Q4. We are in the process of a clear strategic target for that region. I was there last week, again, to help and strengthen our analysis a bit. It'll take a bit of time to rebuild Australia. We're not putting in big profit numbers for the coming three quarters. So please don't do that either, because you will be disappointed. We won't be, because our expectations are realistic today. Asia, Latin America, we had a considerable growth in India again. China was a bit more challenging this quarter, but again, in nominal amounts, of course, it's still small markets and employees working, it's big. Latin America, as I mentioned, we have invested a lot in Brazil. We went from something like, what was it, 90 people originally, Leo, to 280 own staff. We had a delay in opening branches. That means the losses were a bit bigger than we anticipated. Although it looks worse operationally than when you do an acquisition, obviously, it is organic growth, and we are consciously investing in that market because it is a potentially very attractive market. So we see a big variety, a loss in Australia, actually, on balance, a nice profit in Japan, mixed picture in Asia, where the growth in Brazil is one of the reasons that we see some loss there. Talking about different sectors, it's not a surprise manufacturing is down everywhere. The extent at which it is declining differs. A refresher, zero is zero, that's easy. A single plus or a single minus is 0%-10%, and double is more than 10% growth or decline, obviously. You can see here that the public sector for sure is worth noticing. It's stable. So that's actually, even in the U.K., today we see that its decline actually has more or less disappeared. Health and social work, for sure, declining heavily in France and the Netherlands. The Netherlands, actually, it has disappeared more or less as an interesting segment for staffing. I think it's less than 2% of the market now. The problem there, of course, is the VAT. Health institutions cannot deduct VAT. That means we are, by definition, 21% more expensive than any other solution that they create themselves. Since we all know that price elasticity is a reality to deal with, it didn't help. So they have created different solutions. Of course, not as efficient as ours, but 21% is a big gap to cover. Automotive, some growth in Holland, but obviously in the main markets, like Germany and France, double minus, that means decline is more than 10%. Food, as always, fairly stable. I don't think I've ever seen a double minus or a double plus in any of these overviews, except for the fact when we had large client gains, but still we have a strong position in this industry, especially internationally, by the way, so it's always a very stable market. Business services, big growth in the US, big decline in Germany, that's more or less stable. Well, the rest you can read yourself. I'll now hand over to Robert Jan van de Kraats to take you through our financial results and the outlook. Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Some comments on the financial results. This is the income statement, and when putting it together, we always look for positives, of course. And there are quite a few in here. Of course, it starts with the fact that last year, in 11, I should say, in Q4, we put to work 620,000 people. And in this year, the last quarter of the year, Q4 2012, it was 580. And that, putting people to work drives our business. And that is reflected here, a revenue decline of 4%. But then, if you look further down the P&L, we can see a lower gross profit, but well adjusted through the operating expenses, resulting in an EBITDA, an underlying EBITDA, which was 4% below last year, or 5% on an organic basis. And that means the recovery ratio has really sort of shown quite some good results. So a rather slow start at the beginning of the year, well made up for in the second half of the year. So EBITDA of 156 million, the one-offs, which mainly relate to the restructuring programs. Those restructuring programs at Randstad are driven by the payback term, the payback period of 12 months. So we kind of promote those, but they only come on top of the regular field steering results, which are the base for adjustments in the cost base. Then we get to bookkeeping, the amortization and impairment. We've included the regular amortization, which is the write-off of the sort of intangibles, the theoretical value of brand names and customer databases and so forth, which is like sort of 200 million on an annual basis. And on top of that, this quarter, we have evaluated the value of our operations across the world. And in Iberia and the UK, if you look at the allocated value for coming out of the acquisition of VDR, which was highly subjective, which was never the intention. We never bought just the countries. We bought the whole portfolio. But still, we had to allocate it to various countries. And now you have to test if the value is still there. Well, obviously, Ben already gave you the indication on Spain, on the Spanish revenues. There's a much lower potential of earnings going forward than in the past. And that resulted in an impairment. The fact that it goes very well in the U.S., for example, we're not allowed to net it out, which is, to me, a bit weird. So this is very much considered to be bookkeeping, complex bookkeeping. Net finance costs, relatively low, reflecting our policy of using floating interest rates, which we have used now for many years, and which is a wonderful hedge with, bad times, low interest rates, good times, higher interest rates. And that is also more or less how Randstad's cash flow develops. The tax rate being around the level of that has been indicated, 32% effective tax rate on the right base, which is explained in the details. The key financial points, first of all, a free cash flow of close to 400 million euros. That's really, really a very substantial amount of money, and I'll get back to it later to the numbers if we look at the cash flow statement and the balance sheet. But we have a reinforced focus on the collection of trade receivables. That doesn't mean we try to renegotiate contracts with clients, but if we have a contract, We want to make sure we get paid on the day that we have agreed. And as I mentioned last time, it's sort of like 20% overdues, which means beyond the payment date. And that might be the result of invoicing issues or whatever, but there is no reason to have that level 20%, by no means. And that is something we have reinforced. It's called Project Shaw. And Mr. Shaw once said something about not being reasonable, having more effect than being reasonable all the time, and that's something we have tried to apply here. And that has resulted in a reduction of 2 days DSO, which equals more than 100 million, roughly. So that is very valuable to us. We have a liability to the Dutch tax authorities, which sort of is in the process, and we'll deal with that in 2013 rather than in 2012. Leverage ratio at 1.7 times EBITDA, which is well within the targeted range, and we are also, it says here, good progress, but I would almost say that we have completed our refinancing. The impairment of goodwill I mentioned, effective tax rate 32%, and that is a bit higher than it has been in the past because of the fact that we have more profit in high-tax countries like, for example, the United States. The number is relatively high also because of the fact that we report the business tax in France and the corporate income tax, which is an IFRS guideline. Diluted EPS down to 60 cents from 69 cents in the previous year, and proposed dividend at €1.25, which is a payout ratio of 59%. And the options are shares or cash. This was also requested by several investors. The default, however, is cash. Looking at the three segments in which we operate, staffing, in-house in the middle, and then professionals at the bottom, you can see the development. Well, staffing clearly reflects the European difficult times, whereas we see continued growth in North America and good growth in the rest of the world as well, resulting in an EBITDA margin of 4%, and HRS is clearly contributing to this. For example, RPO is in there. Then we have in-house resulting in an EBITDA margin of 5%. That's quite a performance, showing the fact that serving large clients paying relatively low margins with very high productivity is extremely helpful. This is also supported by the way we account for the subsidies. Ben mentioned it, the distribution throughout the year, a bit more towards the end of the year, so that supports the EBITDA margin here. And then professionals, well, we clearly have lower demand across Europe. We do see good growth in the UK, which Ben also elaborated upon, but we do see a decline in perm fees in Europe, and that clearly contributes to the profitability, also some deceleration in the growth in North America. Looking at the gross margin bridge, this connects the gross margin of 2011 Q4 with 2012 Q4. So a like-for-like, effectively, same quarter. And this is sort of giving you an overview of what happened in Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4. So this is the decline in gross margin, which we have discussed in the previous quarters. And then HRS is supporting this a little bit, making it to 18.2%. Many of you might have expected to see a plus here. Typically, Q4 shows a slightly higher gross margin than the previous quarter, Q3. Like in 2011, because also in that year, Q4 did not show the uptick. In Q4 2012, we also don't see the uptick. And that's because we kind of have a netting out of, on the one hand, the typical seasonal pattern, and on the other hand, the fact that in 11 we did have some impact of equal pay in Germany, and in 12, we have sort of revalued our accruals for Social Security because of an increase in 2013. So any balance sheet positions had to be sort of adjusted, and that has a cost. So that's why you see a zero impact here. Perm fees, 8% of gross profit versus 8.2% last year. And I always recall the number in 2007 being north of 12%, which would have an enormous impact on the earnings of the company. The operating expenses down. What we do here is we compare OPEX in sequentially, so from Q3 2012 to Q4 2012, and down here year on year, Q4 2011 than Q4 2012. And there might be a confusing element here because we have some tailwinds from the exchange rate in Q4, 10 million, and we don't have the same tailwind here. It works the other way around for the full year. So that is something because the US dollar rate declined versus the euro in Q4, and that's what we see here. Well, the picture clearly shows the impact of the synergies from SFN, the increase in synergies. You can see the total amount here. The organic adjustments in Europe, still some investment in North America, investments in the rest of the world, especially in Latin America, and some organic growth in the corporate expenses. That is very much the result of the fact that they were slightly low in Q3. So it's much more the comparable base that has an impact here, because you can see here that it is roughly flat. Europe calls down 32 million on a 12-month basis here. If you look at how have we realized those cost reductions, this is a summary. First of all, this is driven by field steering. So it's the natural attrition of employees, of staff turnover rates, which are typically high and even in difficult times remain north of 10%. Well, that allows us, and as you can see, it's north of 20% right now, that allows us to make the necessary adjustment by not replacing people that leave us. Then we have the synergies of SFN, and then finally we have the restructuring programs, which I refer to as an investment which has to be paid back within 12 months. So we moved from Q2, 648, when we made the statement that we were anticipating substantial savings on an annualized basis, 70 to 100 million, Q3, 638, and now Q4 at 616. And if we take out the 10 million currency, then the reduction that's remaining is 12 million, and the distribution is here, 7 million because of restructuring, 7 million because of field steering, and this is the effect of some releases of accruals. As a result of that, field steering contributes 57%. Net debt level, I already mentioned it, a sizable reduction, which is, of course, the result of the fact that our DSO goes down. I mentioned it already, but also you can see another effect of this Project Shaw trying to be more efficient. Rather than having 339 million of cash and cash equivalents, we now have close to 200 million. So we have optimized that. And of course, you know, that's also a matter of both have an impact on the net debt, whether it's in the debt or whether it's in the cash. But this was very helpful for us in using the cash efficiently. The refinancing process is well on track. I already mentioned that it's effectively completed. Randstad has been financed through uncommitted lines, but also through a forward start credit facility, which will kick in May 2013, of 1.4 billion, a Japanese syndicated credit facility, because we are a large operator in the Japanese market. That's easy to obtain. And we have some other facilities still in progress, but that means we are effectively financed up to 2017. The preference shares were issued and collected. The money was collected in the first quarter of 2013 and give us an indefinite capital contribution. We also have stated here standby facilities of receivables, which means that it's standby. It could be used. And this effectively is like an insurance option. If times change, if we would get back to very difficult times, which we don't foresee right now, which is not in our trends, but if it happens, you better organize yourself well in advance. And what we have done is we have aligned a facility to sell 275 million of our receivables if we want to. And that will immediately reduce our net debt and as such the leverage ratio of the company. So it is an insurance option, a standby facility, which we don't intend to use anywhere near. But if times get difficult, we can. So this shows you the free cash flow. Again, the 369 with relatively limited investments in property, etc. But I would say all in all, a pretty healthy picture. The income statement for the full year, a decline of 11% in the underlying EBITDA. And again here, the box, 336 million. That's the combination of the regular amortization of the value of certain intangibles and the impairment together. Tax again, if you look at the adjusted calculation, at roughly 32% effective tax rate. So the financial key points for the full year is a gradual revenue decline throughout the year, 4% growth per working day in Q4 11, moving to minus 5 Q4 12. So that's quite a change. Productivity up, that is a key focus point. A very strong recovery ratio through cost reductions in the second half of the year. A bit late, but well made up for the first half of the year. As such, EBITDA down 6%. The underlying EPS down to 2.11, moving average of DSO down as well. Dividend policy, it applies the regular dividend policy at Randstad. It's the last time. Next year, over the profit of 2013, we'll apply the 40-50% payout ratio, straightforward. This time, we still have applied the policy of aiming at €1.25, and the payout ratio is 59%, and as such, it's limited to 1.25. The choice is between cash and shares, and default is cash, and repair of dilution is something we'll aim for, but timing is yet to be discussed. The outlook. We do see a stable growth trend, minus 6 in October, 5 in November, December, and in January. We do see some signs of stabilization in Europe. The comparison base gets a little easier, minus 4 in Q4 11, it's 0 in Q1 12. So that's the comparison base. We do see a continued growth in gross profit in line with Ben's analysis in North America. And we have the working day impact. We don't have the leap year anymore. Unfortunately, we love leap years, but they only happen once every 4 years. And we do anticipate a limited organic cost decrease in the first quarter. And gradually, you know, you also see the reorganization in France kicking in the course of the year. And these are sort of the key priorities. You know us. These are the ones that we have on our list. I'm going to give you the rates for January now. In the Netherlands, the growth rate was minus 1. In France, minus 13. Germany, minus 7. In Belgium, minus 7. In the UK, minus 2. Iberia, minus 9. North America, minus 5. Again, focus on gross profit and earnings. Rest of Europe, plus 3. Rest of the world plus 1. That's the mix. And then the total is minus 5 for the month of January. So this completes the presentations, and we now move to Q&A.
So we'll address questions from the room, we'll address questions from the line, and then at the end we'll address questions from the representatives from the press. So I would like to start with the Q&A here in the room. Let's start here in the front at the first table. David.
Yeah, thanks. David at your Rabobank. First of all, on Germany, I think it would make sense that the impact of equal pay is limited, visible at least right now, but wouldn't you expect some more impact, let's say, after 6 to 9 months when the gap is should be more closed? I think one of your smaller peers made some comments on that, on Germany. And then maybe on the U.S., do you expect to see any impact of the IT integration or, let's say, the new systems? And is there any effect already visible in your figure in January? Thanks.
Yeah, what do you refer to as an effect, David? What sort of effect do you mean, operationally or financial?
In the U.S., you mean?
Yeah.
On top line.
On top line?
Yeah.
On IT, I'm confused.
No, I mean, is there any disruption or more internal focus?
Oh, no, I'm Linux answer, but I'm not worried about that at all. It's really now, the development of the IT is really in the world of the technicians, the IT people alone. It's actually the system we already had in the Randstad as a front office. Only thing is we had 7 businesses and they had 7 slightly different definitions of stuff, so that all needs to be connected. And then it's back office where actually the bundling is, so we don't expect any operational disturbance in that aspect. The effect in Germany, but you're absolutely right. The impact we don't know yet. We'll have to see how the market reacts. There are obviously many, many different ways in which companies can react. You could also see, expect that maybe you would have a higher rotation of flex workers over time. So that indeed, it's very difficult to give a forecast there. So we honestly don't know what's going to happen.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, and the person next to him. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. ABN AMRO. We'll not ask any questions on Poland. Germany. It seems like global trade is now improving a bit. Do you see any pickup in demand in industrials in Germany? Yeah, and yeah. Second question is on your guidance for the lower cost in Q1. How much of that is the seasonal trend, the lower marketing spend that you usually have in Q1, and how much of that is still cost savings?
No, there's no effect yet in Germany. I'm just making sure that I answered the right question, Tim. Sorry for that. It's too early, actually. We just started. And also, of course, we should keep in mind that however enthusiastic everybody makes note of the December and January developments, these are always odd months. And actually, in general, we have more confidence in the February numbers. And then again, we have Carnival, but that's the case every year, to actually determine what the trend is than the December and January ones. So we have to still be a little bit careful in extrapolating those numbers.
Yes, and with regards to your question on OPEX for Q2, indeed, typically marketing especially is distributed a bit differently through the, not pro rata, but differently through the quarter. So it might well show some increase. We actually would love to see an increase there because it typically is an investment going forward. The restructuring programs that we have announced are France. It's a big chunk. We anticipate impact from that one to come in Q3. That's also the month that we will spend the money, by the way, or that's the quarter we will spend the money. The other components in the restructuring program are the Netherlands and Belgium, and they will start to contribute a little earlier. So that will sort of be the blend of what we're going to see going forward.
Cost savings, or is it mainly from the seasonal?
No, you'll see some cost savings, but we'll also try to invest a little more in marketing whenever we think it's possible.
Yeah, here in the front, Arun.
Hi, Conrad Zalmer, Berenberg. A few questions. First, on the US, you did a great job in terms of your margins, and you indicated that there is further upside to those margins. Could you elaborate a little bit more on how high margins could go once the full synergies are included? The second question on France, do you expect to take more restructuring charges in 2013 after what you took in Q4? And my last question is on pricing pressure in the Netherlands. Can you give us an update on what you see in terms of pressure from competitors on pricing?
Yeah, start with the USA. The increase in EBITDA is not necessarily because the 8 million is nice per quarter, but obviously that doesn't have a major effect on our profit. I think it is for sure the operational and strategic direction we've taken. Staffing has been completely repositioned. The perm business in staffing shows a very, very healthy increase quarter on quarter, and actually month on month, which is a conscious decision. The shedding of low margin blue collar business where we can't make any money it's not completed yet, but actually we're a long way on the way, but it's still to be improved. Positioning of the company in more the clerical and more specialized areas is continuing, so that is a big part of the extra profit source. If you look historically, obviously, in the past, the finance and accounting business had a 40 to 60% of gross margin was perm placement. The market is obviously still not that favorable, but perm placement will and can play a very big role in increasing the margins considerably, the profit margins I'm talking about here. So it's a development of the whole mix of the company. It's the targeting of the company, and it's managing the right aspects. And then last but not least, if you look at specifically, because the MSP we don't see as a profit, we see it as a sales model. And actually, I don't know anybody that makes money in being an MSP. But the RPO, for sure, is also nicely contributing to profit. The market is expected to grow with about 15% per year. We are market leader there, so there's lots of opportunities there. And on top of that, if you talk about delivery models, I think in the US we have, in the meanwhile, a well-developed portfolio of services so that we can actually fine-tune our delivery model to any specific group of demands in the client, in the market, which makes our delivery more efficient. So it's both on gross margin improvement because of all these things. It's more efficient. That means relatively lower cost. And that combination, even without actually a major change in market, will already result in an encouraging development of profit. But over time, I can't put a date to it, I'm sorry for that obviously, because that will depend on market, I see still a lot of potential to actually do considerably better than the 5.3% we've seen here. On France, note, at the moment I don't expect any further provisions. We still have to execute, obviously. We first need to go through the processes with unions and works council. Then we have to execute again. As I mentioned, the earliest possible starting date of that implementation reorganization would be in June. Pricing pressure in Holland, it's there's nothing, no dramatic changes there. So there's no specific comments that we can give there. I think the change in margin we see, we've seen happening now is mainly due to the social security charges. And we took the three measures I mentioned earlier, increase pricing, cut costs, and actually have some more creative solutions, like, for example, the own risk in on the sick leave. But there's a few more things we're doing there technically to try and compensate for that.
Adding to what Ben said on France, I'd like to add that field steering has already contributed. If you look at it sequentially, our FTEs are down 4%. So it's not just the restructuring that we need to reduce the cost base. It's happening as we speak.
Thank you. Okay, Margot is next, sitting next to you. Yeah.
Good morning, Margot from KBC Securities. I have a few questions. The first one is on the UK. What's your ambition for the EBITDA margin going forward, or let's say 2013? And then in the US, staffing and in-house revenues were down 1%, but gross profit was up by 6%. What did the professional gross profit do in the fourth quarter? And then another question on Iberia. What is the market doing there today? Because I was just wondering if you are losing market share to achieve that strong 3.2% margin. And then on Yacht, the revenue decline.
Oh, my, oh, come on.
This is the last one.
Yeah, but it's five, right? Yeah.
Ah, okay, and then...
So did you get it? I got the first two questions, but...
And then on yours, the sales decline deteriorated to minus 13%, but you have a good feeling about first quarter. What did January do?
Oh, yeah, it's very simple. The positive emotion I get with the brand is that we see profit coming, not so much related on a big improvement in top line, but because of a far more efficient and targeted organization. That's key. Let me see, UK EBITDA ambition, there's no limit to our ambition. For 2013, of course, we won't forecast, but for sure, we have a medium-term ambition of let's say, 5 to 6% in good times. That's for sure, the UK should be in that league. We are reducing heavily on clients and segments where we don't make money. We see the profitable segments coming back again. Finance has been doing well, but I don't have the courage to forecast medium or short term that the financial markets are going to be really good. By the way, the growth in finance is more in financial positions in other companies than in the city, as you might be aware, because it's not exactly booming there. And then I lost you on the other questions.
US gross profit, and you asked also about risk. We don't give you all that kind of disclosure, but I can say that the gross margin and profit is improving. And then you asked for market share in Iberia, the development. And I think we kind of...
Do we
know?
No
loss.
No loss. No, for sure not. Yeah, so those were the two questions of Mahona.
Can we finally move it to the table? Yeah, Arun?
Let me stick to two questions. The first question, can you summarize all the cost savings plans you've executed, and then referring to the press release that you achieved the 70 to 100 million euros already as a run rate in the fourth quarter, how much is that due to additional field steering, and sort of what is left in the bag for next year and in which region? That's the first question.
Nice.
Second question is on the recovery ratio. Robert-Jan, like you already pointed out, in the fourth quarter, the EBIT margin was maintained. So is that sort of what we should think of going forward at a 4% revenue drop, given the cost-saving plans, once it's able to maintain the EBIT margin, or isn't that set in stone? Can you comment on that?
Yeah, the first one, there's an easy rule of thumb which we shared with you, and if you apply that, and then on top of that we have the field steering, is that if we spend the provisions we've taken for your organization, we want to get the money back within 1 year. And if you apply that calculation, you'll see that you'll be able to explain a fair part of the cost reduction. Two, we shared with you the slide on what percentage of savings we had in specific markets because of field steering. I think that we can't get into any every market specific room. That's a bit much, to be honest. Yeah,
it's 74 million that we spend that we have sort of recorded. Most of it, or a substantial part, has not been spent yet. So the conclusion is, I would summarize it and say, field steering contributes between 50 and 75% of the cost reductions. And then going forward, the recovery ratio, you ask me for the result, we've given you sort of the input, and the input is that we aim at a recovery ratio of at least 50%. And that's what we continue to do. And we've got quite some ingredients lined up, be it field steering and restructuring programs that still have to be executed.
Yeah, Mark.
Yeah, Mark Schwarzenberg, ING. I want to drill down a little bit deeper into the German trend. 8% price effect and minus 7 in January doesn't imply, say, minus 15 on volumes, and that's not the full effect of the Ecopay implementation. Could you give a little bit more feel for what we should expect for the German trend going forward?
I'm sorry, Mark. I don't get the question.
Yeah, January is down 7%, and you have a pricing effect of plus 8, you mentioned. So could you give a little bit more?
I don't get the pricing effect of plus 8.
A positive price effect of around 8%, I see.
Oh, revenue per hour, yeah, that's mix. Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, it's also for me a bit confusing. That's why I'm asking for a little bit more details on what's going on in volume terms and how we should read this going forward.
Sure. What we did is we had a price increase campaign in the market, obviously, because the social security charges, CLAs, etc., forced us to increase the price. So let's say the nominal price, or else our margin would suffer more. So that's the difference in between all the other developments.
Okay.
So the rest is normal mix stuff, but that's the main trigger of the price per hour difference, if you want, compared to before.
All the components together, what is then the volume impact and the equal pay impact and this mix effect?
Oh, I can give it to you just about. Give me a minute. We have this fantastic book, which you would love to have, I'm sure, but I'm sorry. If you look at price development, because there's all, revenue per hour in Q4 was up 8%. So that explains, that is the difference.
And the volumes are now in January?
Down double digit, clearly.
Yeah.
And then the equal pay impact, because it's not much in Q4, how should we...
No, there's nothing there yet, because the increases or the surcharges don't kick in yet in Q4. Right. So it's too early, yeah.
Okay. And then on Germany, the additional costs for the implementation of the equal pay, could you give us a number for that?
It's low. It has been done with our own people. We have an excellent IT department, so it's something that's not material.
Okay. And then on the U.S., the minus 5 in January, that's clearly below market. Could you give a bit more detail how that...
Yeah, maybe Linda, you want to talk about it a bit? Because we have the super expert here, so why not use that?
So first of all, when we look at market, we compare market trends to net fees, right, to our gross profit line. I think that to compare market to revenue is a very misleading number.
And doesn't usually, you could pursue the market number improperly. So we compare it to the margin line, and on the margin line we are at or above market. So that'd be my first comment. And you know, that's going to very much be the theme for the U.S. Going forward. Some of the larger sheddings have occurred over the course of last year, and there will be a point where some of those are anniversaried, so you may see revenue and gross profit become more in line in the latter half of the year. But again, we continue to look at all of our accounts and to invest in much higher margin business. So, you know, I would encourage you to judge our performance on the gross profit line and the profit line, of course.
Okay, let's move now to the line. Let's see how many questions we have. We have five people on the line. So, operator, can you please open the line for questions?
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. Toby Reeks from Bank of America is online with a question.
Morning, guys. Happy Valentine's Day. Just wanted to ask you on the envelope of cost savings that you've given, and you've obviously exceeded that now, 70 to 100 million. If you look at the cost savings you announced in Q2, 3 and 4, if you add those all up, you get to about 53. And you haven't really used very much of that. So should I just be sort of thinking, okay, we're at the bottom of the 70, and I should add about 40 to that. So we're actually sort of going for, you know, closer to over 100 million in cost savings by the end of sort of Q4 2013?
Yeah, that would be the low end of our ambition.
Okay, thank you.
But you have to take into account again that the implementation of the actual cost savings in France will only take place in the second half of the year. So the timing, of course, plays a role here. But I would be pretty disappointed would it only be 110 million.
Okay, thank you very much. Then the second one is you referred to earlier about the returns being way above average for the sort of new HR services. What do you mean by average? Do you mean average of the group? Do you mean average of peers? And can you, I'm not asking for numbers of what those returns are, but could you sort of give us the range of returns from those HR services and where they would stack up within that range?
Yeah, I actually shared already that it's above 7% EBITDA in Q4. Isn't that
That's 7% of EBITDA?
Yeah.
Okay, and
I'm not going to make this a habit, of course, but just for fun.
Of course not. Can you give us an idea of where they break up within that, the different services?
MSP is hardly profitable. RPO is profitable. Payroll is profitable. Outplacement is profitable. What do I forget? I guess that's about it. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, guys.
And Toby, just to make sure that you've got your numbers right, and the decline in cost Q2 to Q4 is already 30 million. If you multiply that by 4, you're at 120.
Thank you very much.
Your next question, Robert?
Tom Sykes from Deutsche Bank is online with a question.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. I wondered if you could just give a bit more details on the in-house business that obviously you've seen. It looks like about 100 million increase year on year. Could you split that out between transfers and what the underlying demand is doing, and what you think is the likelihood of more transfers going forward, please? And then I know that you spoke about the gross profit movement in the US and where you were above or below market. But could you just give an outlook or a view of what you're seeing in terms of IT market US and perhaps the light industrial and chemical markets US from a volume standpoint, please?
Linda will take the US part, and the first part is going to be, the first question is going to be a very short answer, I'm afraid, Tom, but we'll first go to Linda.
So in terms of market volumes, I think light industrial is probably going to be very strong this year. That strength won't necessarily translate into a lot of revenue for us because very often that growth is of questionable profitability. But I think if you're looking at the overall market, you'll probably see a lot of strength in light industrial, if for no other reason because of the construction of the Affordable Care Act. You know, that is probably going to be one of the most significant external events in the staffing industry and may have the most profound effect in the industrial space in terms of how employers compose their workforce.
Okay.
IT will continue to be strong for some of the same reasons. A lot of companies, a lot of healthcare institutions, you know, getting up to speed with the Affordable Care Act. And we see clerical as being very solid, but the larger growth coming from the permanent market. So there may be slightly less in the financial and banking sector, which has been traditionally a strong sector, but we expect strong growth from a permanent perspective, so on the profit line.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
The forecast on growth in in-house is, if I understand your question right, Tom, obviously there's going to be a big difference per market. We also explained that quite a big part of the growth was due to transferring clients of SFN from branches to in-house. That will depend on achievable margins and profits, and obviously the cyclical development. There's little we can do about that. There's also nothing I would like to forecast on that.
Okay, but is it possible, I mean, kind of to disaggregate the transfers from the underlying demand, and are you going to, when do you annualize the sort of biggest transfers, because obviously your incremental drop through on that incremental revenue is quite high at the moment.
No, but we did
just trying to work out when that might annualize.
We had 2% growth organically, and the rest of the growth was due to transfer. We released that number, so it's in the pack somewhere.
Oh, okay, sorry.
No, it's okay. No, thank you. There's a lot in the pack, so we also every now and then forget a number.
And if I could just add one more. Of the on the professionals, the decline in professionals, are you able to say how much of that year-on-year in Q4 was coming from Yacht? At all, and how much of an improvement?
It was minus 13%. We also published that number, yeah.
Oh, okay. Read it properly. Okay,
okay.
Thanks very much.
But that's why you're allowed more than two questions, because the answers are there.
Okay.
Thanks,
Tom.
Thank
you. Cheers. Bye.
So next question from the line. Please limit yourself to two questions, please. We have quite a number of people in the line.
Robert Plant from JP Morgan is online with a question.
Thank you. My two questions are, first of all, in the US where you've deliberately shed customers, have any of the customers actually said, we will stick with Randstad and accepted a cost increase? And secondly, in the rest of the world, will the margin loss narrow across 2013 as some of those startup offices in Latin America begin to fill up? Thank you.
Yeah, actually, your first remark is not only the case in the U.S., but all over the Randstad organization, especially also in Europe. So we are shedding clients. Actually, we give them a choice. Either they accept a price increase, and to our surprise, specifically, for example, in France, we have had quite a few clients that gave in on price. Some even came back after they had tested another supplier, which, of course, is the best situation to be in as a supplier. So, yes, it happens every now and then. And again, a part of it is merely procurement. They buy, their only incentive is a lower margin, never mind the total cost of ownership of labor, which is what we try to sell. So yeah, that's for sure happening. But still, the effect is that we do lose volume, and that means we do lose loss. So that's good news. And does it say that again?
The rest of the world, the margin?
Yeah, I didn't get the question. When the overcapacity in, for example, Brazil will fill up? That was the question more or less, right?
Effectively, yes.
Yeah. It'll take maybe a few more quarters, but during the year we expect, for example, Brazil to be at about break-even.
Thank you.
Okay, next question, please.
William Van Der Pump from UBS is online with a question.
Morning, it's William Van Der Pump from UBS. Actually, just one from me. You touched on the Affordable Care Act in the U.S. Could you just bring us up to date as to where the staffing industry is with that? I know there were some initial fears it could be negative in terms of pricing, obviously potential benefit if it pushes more people towards the temp industry, which I think was kind of the gist of the earlier comment. Could you just talk about that and perhaps any early conversations with clients, how that change might work through this year, please?
Yeah, Linda will expand on that. I have to warn you. Robert John and I sat together with Linda half an hour with 10 slides, and we didn't get it yet.
Okay.
Then the next half hour we sort of got it, so she's going to give you a one-minute summary of something that's way too complicated, the question today, but anyhow.
Okay.
So
There are so there are two pieces. So one is the financial impact, and then the other piece would be the impact on demand or greater interest in the level of contingency within companies. So on the latter, we think it's going to be very positive. As I indicated, that will have a lot more impact on the lower skill positions. And the reason for that is quite simple. The Affordable Care Act requires you to offer a fairly high level of coverage to all employees. But if the cost of that coverage exceeds a certain percentage of that person's wages, they can go and ask for a subsidy from the government. And Randstad will have to fund, or the employer would have to fund, part of that subsidy. So any financial impact and pricing impact is very much in the lower skill categories. We have calculated what that impact is. It's not dramatic, especially if you compare it to some of the SUI experiences we've had in the last couple of years. So we have a lot of experience recapturing that kind of cost. So it's a manageable amount. It will be passed on to customers over time because the cost will evolve over time. But we do expect the impact on demand to be quite favorable.
Okay. I suppose in your current mix of business, what proportion would you see at the lower end, that would be captured by that financial impact? Is it, 20% of your book or less?
Yeah, and it's not just the wage level, eh? It's how long they've worked for you. So they have to work for you a certain number of hours over a one-year period. So probably in our overall workforce, we expect approximately 25% to meet the time requirements, and of that, a much smaller percentage that will require subsidies. So, I will say, if you look at our overall portfolio, it's a lower single-digit number as a percentage of pay rates.
That's great. Thank you very much.
By the way, we should add two things. I think it's only going to come in effect January 1, and it's also an opportunity because it will make us more competitive than a permanent contract, which I think is a very important element to take into account. So we obviously embrace Obamacare.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, next question.
Paul Sullivan from Barclays is online with a question.
Morning, it's Paul Sullivan from Barclays. Just one or two. On gross margin, can you summarise your thoughts on the sort of push and pulls on gross margin as you see them over this year? And you've obviously got the negatives in Holland and Germany. You may have a positive in France. Do you think you can sustain flat on the basis of the revenue trends as you see them currently?
No, because it'll heavily depend on mix. So we've shared the developments we've seen, we've shared the measures we've taken, and all the rest actually will be speculating on what's going to happen in the market, which is very difficult. We don't expect dramatic impacts for the group from these developments as far as we can judge the trends now. That's, I think, all we can share.
Okay, fine. And then just secondly, on the overall cost savings, you've done the 120 annualized. Looks like from the fourth quarter charges that we should be targeting another 50 million annualized by the end of this year. Is that correct?
Well, I already said that 110 would be very disappointing to us. And the strategy that if we provide for money and then actually when we spend it, we want to have the money back within a year. So I think it's a very fairly simple calculation to come to actually a very interesting number.
Thank you very much.
So we're moving to France now. Laurent?
Laurent Brunel from Exane BNP is online with a question.
Yes, good morning. On the French situation, can you share with us your view on the ongoing labor reform to introduce more flexibility? As short-term contract will face additional taxes and not temp, do you believe it will be positive and lead to, let's say, rising penetration rates? And regarding the temp industry is being asked to introduce a CDE-style arrangement for the temps, in your view, what will be the percentage of CDI contracts that need to be offered to temps? Thank you.
François just tells me it's 10%.
10%.
So he got your question, which is impressive.
Very good.
Is that an answer?
Yeah.
I'm just a mailman here, so...
And overall, do you believe that it could be a positive for the temp industry? Well, what's your view on it, please?
It is, huh? Yeah. It is a positive.
And can you be a bit more precise?
François says no.
Okay, that's very clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Laurent.
Bye.
Laurent Olivia from La Taxis is online with a question.
Yes, good morning. I have three questions on the Netherlands. At first, could you give us the organic revenue growth per month for Q4? Secondly, was the Dutch market picking up in December and in January? And thirdly, regarding yacht, could the yacht restructuring generate further one-off expenses in 2013, please?
Would you please repeat the last question on yacht?
Yes, could the yacht restructuring generate further one-off expenses this year?
Jacques says no. I didn't get the question, but no.
Okay.
And you want to have the the growth of the Dutch market. Actually, it's published every 4 weeks. It's hovering. It was at -1, but it's hovering around the -3 for quite a while already.
Mm-hmm.
And then you wanted growth numbers for different markets per month. Is that, did I get that right?
Yes.
Oh, just the Netherlands. Again, it has been stable for months already at around -3, -4, -3, -3. And now we had a -1 in, it was December, I think. But yeah, that December is a funny month to compare with. So I would say trends is at about -3.
-3, okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Maybe final question.
We have another two, volgens mij. Next question, please.
Keane Martin from Jefferies is online with a question.
Morning all. I had a question regarding affordable care, which Linda answered most of it. But I wondered whether, in her view, the industry would experience the volume positive in 2013 as clients basically anticipate the legislation coming in January 2014, and then potentially you have the pass-through effect to deal with next year?
Yeah, you know, I think Ben referenced the complexity of the Affordable Care Act, and I think as, you know, people, many of our clients are just beginning now to dig into that. So I think that we will see an escalating positive impact from that. It's very hard to quantify how much it is. It's also hard to quantify how much of that we'll choose to take advantage of, because a great deal of it will occur in a segment that's of less than any interest to us. But yes, I think you'll see a crescendo of the positive impact throughout 2013 and up to 2016, because although it's in effect as of next year, it's in effect in a rising way from a cost perspective over the next couple of years. So yeah
it's a phased introduction. Yeah, yeah, agreed. Yeah, thanks, Linda.
Okay, final question from the line.
Matthew Lloyd from HSBC is online with a question.
Good morning, guys. Two questions. Firstly, in France, how much of the perm fees that you're taking, the fee business, is actually finder's fee for short-term fixed contract? Just trying to work out that may shift towards temp, whether you lose something on one side as well as gaining on the other. And then secondly, are we beginning to see more pricing discipline in SMP, MSP bids? Everybody seems to be talking about how little money they make out of it. Is anybody starting to put more sensible pricing on it?
The first question, no, that's really... and actually, we don't even know. I guess we could measure it, but we don't measure it. If we have a perm placement, it's a perm placement, and whether the employee stays, well, preferably short. But we honestly don't know, so we can't give you any trend in that respect.
Fair enough.
Well, MSP pricing, yeah. Actually, pricing, it's hardly relevant because, again, MSP is not a profitable model and we don't think it will ever be a profitable model. The only reason to be that is, and that's also the only contract we actually pursue, is if we can have a reasonable part of the spend. Then we are interested in the MSP. MSP as such, as a business model, is a cost. Not a big cost, but it is a cost, and we keep on seeing it as such. And actually, some actually give it away for free, which, yeah, that's the other extreme. And even parties that are not able to supply a big part of the spend is probably part of a long-term strategy then. But again, we can't get excited about pricing on MSP. We won't. We only want to have the ones that we can deliver. Pricing will slowly diminish, I think, the prices. We've seen it come from 2.5% to considerably less over time. I don't see any reason why that trend would change.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that leaves the questions from the press. So I don't know if any questions from the press here in the room. I don't see any hands. Yeah, one.
Just one question. Does it work? Yeah. Can you tell me more about having your own risk now for the sick leave in the Netherlands, how that works precisely and what the effects will be?
Yeah, it's very simple, obviously, since we have a very big population. If you employ, let's say, 80,000 people, then the risk is not too difficult to forecast. We know what the cost would be would we actually have somebody else take that risk, so let's say insure it. So we made those calculations more than once. We looked at the cost to actually manage those operations ourselves and to develop the necessary tools to do that. The outcome every time we calculated was positive, so we think we are more efficient in the calculation for the time being. But even more important, one of our key interests is the well-being of people. So we have had Health at Work, an internal program, been running for, I think it's 8 years now, where we are very, very close to the people that actually fall ill. We do everything we can to get them back to the workplace. And we've been very, very efficient at doing that. So that's also why we think it's a good effect if we can keep on doing that even more. And the financial impact of that is going to be, we think, positive. We think we're going to actually spend less money than we would if we would insure it elsewhere. Yeah.
Okay, maybe nog één laatste final question from Matthijs here in the middle. And then we close the meeting.
Good morning. 2 weeks ago, Manpower released results. And although they were pretty cautious about 2013, they did believe they would see a recovery by the end of the year. Are you willing to share this view?
No, I'm always impressed with forecasts like that, and I'll stay impressed. For us, it's not relevant. For us, it's not relevant. Again, I know for sure. That's why I'm so happy you have your job and I have mine, because I'm not in the. We are not in the forecasting business. We are in the HR business. A recruitment business, and we have to build an organization that adapts fast to actuals. We do not want to have an organization that reacts on expectations, because for sure you'll be wrong somewhere, right?
Okay,
to illustrate the effect, let's say that the market would really increase in Q4. So my next question is, so what do I do then? Where do I invest? Do I invest in logistics in Amsterdam, or in secretaries on San Diego, or in IT people in Japan, in Tokyo? It's not relevant. It's an impossibility to actually translate macro trends to operational measures we have to take and investment we have to do in our business. That's why we have field steering. That's why we have actuals. If the market is going down and we have a big contract win of a client, we have to invest. Never mind the macroeconomics. If it's the other way around, we have to cut costs. So the macro expectation, and don't get me wrong, I'm very much in favor of economic growth, but it has no effect on how we manage the company.
Okay, one final one. How much of revenues could you give the split in the Netherlands? Yards, Randstad, Netherlands, Templeteam, is it possible?
No, we look at a total market. It's north of 200 million, that's the yard. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay, before closing the meeting, I would like to mention that we also published our annual report today. There's an online annual report. You can find the link to that website in our press release. So please have a look. And with that, I would like to close the meeting. Thanks for coming to Diemen and also the people on the line. Thanks for joining the call. See you soon. Bye.